Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 316 for comics originally released on August 28th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Justice League number 23, which is part 6 of 6 of the Trinity War. And just to say it out at the beginning, we're probably going to get a lot more spoilery in this review than typical. I think just kind of because of the nature of the story, and I mean, it's leading into Forever Evil. We'd wind up talking about that next week anyways, and frankly, it's just some of that stuff I want to talk about. So if you haven't read it and you don't want spoilers, we've got time codes in the show notes. Just jump forward to the Marvel one. Come back after you've read it. We've also had a thread on the forum covering the Trinity War and the Justice League stuff. We've got spoiler tags in the forum, so you're able to kind of skim through and not get spoiled unless you want to, which I think is a really cool thing. And I really appreciate everyone posting on the forum using those, because that way I was able to kind of read a few things before I'd read the issue and not have it spoiled. So thanks, guys. I really appreciate that. Now, Drew, I had split feelings on this one, and it was very much kind of a first half of the book, second half of the book sort of thing.
Okay.
The first half, a couple of things rubbed me the wrong way. When we got that first double page splash that kind of required, you know, rotating the book 90 degrees for the credits page and stuff, that kind of grated on me a little. It's just a personal pet peeve. And there were so many characters involved in this, because we've got the Justice League, we've got Justice League Dark, we've got Justice League of America, we've got a few other characters, you know, the Trinity of the Question, the Phantom Stranger, and Pandora thrown in for good measure. Plus, you know, we're going to get some other characters later on. And there are a few places where I'm looking in the background, it's like, no, wait, who's that character again? And, I mean, the artist did a fine job. Ivan Reis is a great artist. But I hit that, it kind of slowed me down. We got a two-page splash fest of a splash of the slug fest or whatever, and it's like, okay, it's a little gratuitous, whatever. And then we get another two-page, you know, rotation of, you know, with the Trinity and stuff, and it's like, some of this, in this case, the Trinity of Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, almost felt like somebody was, and by somebody I mean Ivan Reis, potentially padding his original art collection for sale, which, frankly, if I were an artist, I'm not going to say I wouldn't do the exact same thing. There were just a few places that sort of thing felt indulgent, if you know what I mean. I mean, was it just me, or did you have similar feelings?
Although there were a lot of big splash pages, and yeah, there were more than your normal run-of-the-mill comic. It was close to Superman Unchained number one, right around there, in the big splash page per comic ratio was way out of whack. Although there were way too many characters to really follow, it was cool to finally get somewhere. and we got somewhere.
There, oh yeah.
Something happened in this issue. So,
well, once we hit that one page where we find out how, you know, Dr. Light got killed, and there's kryptonite in Superman's brain again. Like I said, we're going to get a little spoilery here. And then we start getting answers. For me, that was where the issue did almost, I don't want to say a 180, but just kicked up to a whole nother notch. I didn't see the stuff with who the traitor was. I mean, I knew there was going to be a traitor. They'd been pushing that, but I hadn't really given any thought as to who it was going to be. And then we got just reveal after reveal after reveal after reveal. I counted at least 4 or 5 major reveals that really set up some stuff I'm very excited about coming up in Forever Evil. And frankly, you know, before this, it's like, yeah, we're going to have Forever Evil. It's like, okay, I'll deal with it. It's not something that I was dreading, but I wasn't excited about it either. But this ended on just a wonderful second half or so of the issue that I'm much more jazzed about Forever Evil now than I was.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot more to talk about in Forever Evil than it, less hokey. And more actual plot stuff. Now I don't read a lot of Superman comics. Mm-hmm. I haven't in the past, but if there's anything ever wrong with Superman, if I'm a betting man, it's probably kryptonite related. So
that would be one of my two guesses. Magic is the other one, but yeah.
You really should have looked into that first. But I guess that's okay. There was a sliver in there. That makes sense.
It begs the question why Batman doesn't have, like, a kryptonite scanner.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not while he's hanging around in Gotham, but any time he knows he's going to hang out with Superman or the Justice League. That just seems like the sort of thing he would have in his arsenal somehow, somewhere. So I thought that was a little bit, I don't want to say out of the blue, but I thought we'd already kind of gotten one or two other explanations for what had happened there, that it almost started to make the narrator feel a little untrustworthy in places. But I quickly forgave that because the Adam character here, who was giving some of the exposition here, fun character, very interesting. And just, you know, when it's, oh, you're the traitor? The next reveal, I certainly didn't see coming. And like I said, from there, things just kept kind of kicking up a notch. I'm very curious where they're going to go with some of these things, particularly, you know, in Forever Evil and where the ramifications are going to go outside of that.
Now, is Earth 3, is that new?
Yes and no. Yes, in terms of this version of Earth 3 is new. Okay. And it's interesting that the first true parallel world that interacts with the mainstream New 52 Earth is Earth 3, and blatantly called such. Now, Earth 3 goes back to the old JLA-JSA crossovers back in the original Justice League of America title, where the first time, and this was after Flash, I guess it was 123, where the Barry Allen Flash met the Jay Garrick Flash, sets up Earth 2 as the Golden Age world, essentially. Those characters are still around. After that, we get a few more crossovers with the Flashes. Then the Justice League meets the Justice Society. They have an adventure. And I think it was the second or maybe third, and I'm doing this off the top of my head so I could be wrong on this, crossover where we meet the Earth 3 version of these characters, which was the Crime Syndicate. And okay. You had an evil Superman. Everything that was good is bad in that world and vice versa.
Right.
After Crisis on Infinite Earths, that world kind of got wiped out and almost replaced with the antimatter world. And at one point there was JLA Earth 2, the hardcover, which at that point Earth 2, and I forget if it had a dash or not, and it was, you could argue semantics, but it was clearly not the Golden Age Earth 2 pre-crisis. It was the evil version of everybody. So the Earth 3 became Earth 2. It got confusing. Then with, I forget if it was Infinite Crisis or not, they kind of brought it back, but it was an evil version of Earth 2 almost at that point for Earth 3. So we've gotten versions of a lot of these characters before, but just as the New 52 rebooted the mainstream versions, these are, you know, a new version of these are three characters.
Okay.
And one or two, we literally had, you know, never seen there. We'd never seen before and didn't really have, previous incarnations, I believe.
Like Power, is there a Power Ring? Has he been around before?
Yeah. If we go to the two-page splash where we get of them, we've got Power Ring, which looks to be very much a Hal Jordan equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Quick, which is the Flash equivalent. Ultraman, Superman's equivalent. Superwoman, which is Wonder Woman's equivalent. And I love the barbed wire on her lasso. We've got Owlman, which is the Batman equivalent. We have, what did they call him? Deathstorm, which is the Firestorm equivalent, which I don't think we've ever seen that before.
And then Sea King, who didn't make it very long.
Yeah, Sea King, yeah. Well, that's why you don't want to go through these portals first, I guess. And then Atomica, which obviously we've seen the entire time in Justice League of America, but I don't recall a Earth 3 version of the Atom before. But I've always loved the Crime Syndicate just as a team, as a concept. And, you know, with the three Justice Leagues having met, having their, you know, an evil version of Justice League show up, just seemed like a really fitting touch and a nice one. But man, this issue, I think some people might complain about this issue and about Trinity War not really ending, but just leading into Forever Evil, which it very much does. I mean, this yeah. ends not even on a to be continued, but same bat time, same bat channel, tune in for the cliffhanger finale or, you know, whatever you want to call it there.
Yeah, it looks like there is a battle that is going to be the first page of Forever Evil.
Yeah.
A clash, and that'll be how Forever Evil starts, I would guess.
Well, just which starts it off, it starts it off with a heavy action sequence.
Yeah.
And that's usually a good thing. Followed by a caption of go see Trinity War and find out how it got there. Which, again, I see people maybe not liking as much. But yeah, they answered a lot of questions here about, you know, who the outsider was. And on that one, what I liked about that is they played fair when they started telling about how the Outsider had come to this world. Yeah, with the 5 years ago stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And we see that somebody else had, yeah, it was like second page of the story. And we see a female with him. At first, I was thinking, you know, over in Justice League of America Vibe, Gypsy has clearly jumped worlds. That must be her. I was right. Obviously totally mistaken on that. But that was one where they played fair, and it was still interesting.
Now, when this Grid character that kind of took over Cyborg, is Cyborg dead?
Cyborg is not dead. What happens there, and I love this bit, the armor, the metal, the robotic part of him just basically, you know, takes off and leaves him. He's still there. He's being surrounded by Green Lantern's field to keep him alive, and they're trying to get him to medical attention before what's left of him keels over, because there's not a whole lot left. And I liked it because we see a softer side of Batman, and one that fits in character. But there was an aspect of when Grid is peeling off of Cyborg and forming up that just kind of reminded me of kind of Ultron in some respects.
Yeah, very much so.
So, brand new character, definite twist on you know, what's going on with Cyborg. Certainly is a major, major turning point, changing point for that character. It has me wondering what's going to happen next with him. Now, we've got one or two other reveals that look to be set up for Forever Evil, specifically who the prisoner is that the crime syndicate brought with them. If I had to guess, that's probably the Lex Luthor of their world.
That makes sense, because I think he's the only one that didn't get a villain month book, right?
Well, and also, historically, in Earth 3, since all the good guys are bad guys, you take the best bad guy you've got, and he's the solo hero in that world.
Yeah.
So, Alexi Luthor, I think it was.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That would fit well.
I mean, there are two or three others it could be. It could be, you know, Max Lord, or, you know, who knows. But, again, this issue ended for me a lot better than it started.
Yeah, and for me, this really picked up the pace and got us going in a way that it hadn't up to this point. If, you know, the series as a whole up to this point was probably a 3, whereas for me, this ended so well with all these reveals. This is a high 4 for me, this issue is. And I mean, really, again, I would echo what you said. I'm excited now and jazzed for Forever Evil because of all this great stuff that's been introduced, and I want to find out what happens. So that's a great issue.
Yeah, for me, definitely a high 4 also. And it's funny because I think if it had started a little bit later in the story with, you know, how come Superman's dying or whatever, and started at about that point and was just the second half of this issue or whatever, it probably would have been a 5 out of 5 for me. But the first part was just, it had to pick up steam from where it had started off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it ended, like I said, a lot better than I was expecting. And really, I think, I don't say redeemed Trinity War, but made it, I think, a much more pivotal and important story and entertaining story than most of the rest of it, frankly, had been.
Not bad for a regional incident.
True. But it kicks off, it leads into a true event. So you could say it was a stealth pre-event, if you want to harp on terminology. Either way, it was a good read. And yeah, at the end of the day, that's what matters over any of the terminology and stuff. But, I'm a big fan of the Crime Syndicate, and having them in play certainly puts a whole new spin on what they can do with Forever Evil.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting, I think.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
Scarlet Spider number 21. Now, have you been reading Scarlet Spider?
I read issue 20 because it was a tie-in with Superior.
Okay.
So I read that one and then went ahead and picked this one up too since we were reviewing it. Thought I'd better read it.
Always helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
I think this is a pretty solid book. It's not anywhere close to the Superior foes and Superior Spider-Man and some of the other books that are really top notch, but I thought this was okay. I liked it. It was not great. For me, it had some just a lot of stuff in there. It seemed to be a lot of baggage in there that maybe I just didn't know. But I don't even think if I would have known all the backstory, that would have helped me enjoy this anymore. There was a lot of stuff between the old clone and new clone, and then the big reveal at the end, which we're not going to spoil another one, so I won't tell you that. That just seemed a little anticlimactic for me, and it wasn't that big of a deal. But I liked the character, and it's kind of interesting, the whole idea of him being a clone and, you know, feels trying to find himself, you know, and redeem himself, but then he feels he has these setbacks and things. So that part I found compelling. And so I'll probably read a couple more just to see if I get a little bit more of that. But it's not at the level of Superior Spider-Man for me.
I would agree with that, but I also think that Superior Spider-Man is just really got that creative team has their A game out and has for the entire time they've been doing Superior. So I think that's a high bar to reach. For me, I liked this issue, but I'm not going to say I respected this issue. And kind of what I mean by that is it was a perfectly enjoyable read. I didn't hate it or anything of the sort. But I felt it relied on a couple of writing techniques, crutches, or just reused a few things. Specifically, a lot of the scenes end in kind of a mysterious way, and kind of they cut away, and it's going to get revealed probably next issue as to what's really, you know, how those scenes concluded or whatever. Although, to me, it's pretty obvious. And also, a lot of this issue brought up the concept of the unreliable narrator. How much of it really happened, how much of it didn't, what was real, what was not, and that kind of undercut aspects of it. And I felt they did a backpedaling on how the previous issue ended for Kane, and I get why they did it, and it also goes towards, you know, the unreliable narrator aspect. But that whole thing between those two, it's like you tease a bunch of one-page scenes with some of these other characters, don't really give me any conclusion. Some of the stuff I'm following with Scarlet Spider himself, you're telling me, well, some of that may not have really happened and whatnot. It may have just been a hallucination or what have you. And like I said, it just kind of undercut a lot of the issue for me. Again, what was there was good. I liked you know, how the two Scarlet Spiders were interacting and stuff. I liked how the story ended. It set up some fun stuff, but it's certainly not something I would say, oh, you've got to read this issue, you'll love the title or anything of the sort. If you're a fan of the characters in play in this, I definitely recommend it. But as much as the Doc Ock as Spider-Man is a controversial thing for some people in Superior, and just, oh, I'm not going to read it, it's not Peter. The Clone Saga was a similar such thing for Spider-Man, and of course this entire title is revolving around that, and this entire storyline is bringing that all back into play too. So I can see where some people would just hate this with a passion, whereas for me it was a good story, but not a great issue.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I enjoyed it enough that I want to read a couple more to make a final decision on it. And I did enjoy the crossover issue last time, mm-hmm. issue 20. And so, although this is just a 3 for me, there's enough here because the one page, there were several pages with other characters where you didn't care for it because you didn't, it was kind of a writing crutch for you. I do want to find out what, so they got me. It worked for me because I do want to find out what happened to those characters, where we just kind of get the fade to black and a cry in the night on some of those characters. I want to find out exactly what happened. So, I'll be back just to check that out and hopefully get some conclusions there and then make a decision on whether this is a title that I want to read on a regular basis or not.
That makes sense. I guess for me, those one-page scenes with those other characters, I have a fairly strong suspicion as to what happened and what we're going to get revealed. And they may go in a completely different direction, but I'm not really expecting that. So to me, it's there is no what's going to happen to these character aspects. I'm pretty confident in my guess.
Okay.
Again, could be wrong, but if I'm not, it's going to be, well, yeah, I expected that. And if I am wrong, then it's going to be a matter of, but, you know, why didn't what I expect happen? Can they explain that? Can they come up with something better? Sometimes writers can, sometimes they can't. That's really one of the strengths of Robert Kirkman, is he leads you down a path and then swerves, whereas a lot of writers aren't able to do that successfully without seeming like a knee-jerk, well, yeah, you expected this, so I went left even though it makes no sense. Christopher Yost, the writer here, you know, I'm not expecting a major swerve. But again, next issue I'll find out for sure. The other thing that really stood out for me with this issue was, as I read it, like I said, I liked it, was trying to come up with some notes, I really didn't find a whole lot to really comment on. Because a lot of it between, is this a hallucination, oh, we've got these one-page scenes with the supporting cast, all this other stuff, I didn't feel that there was tons and tons of story. And this was clearly the first part of a story arc, and it certainly got the story into full swing. But that's all it did. You know, it didn't really move it past the setup and, you know, getting to that first turning point in the story. I mean, would you agree with that kind of assessment?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, like I said, it's gotta stay around a three for me. And, but I'm not giving up quite yet. And, I'm a little less, excuse me, you might hear a siren in the background.
I was wondering.
They're coming to get me and take me away. So I have to hurry through this one.
They're quite alarmed by the story too.
But yeah, and then that final reveal, that's a big character, so I'm excited to see exactly where that takes it as well. But it's just a three, and it just kind of lays there.
What is that thing in the background doing? Circling your block?
Yeah, it's a volunteer fireman siren. So they're taking their time getting there to shut it off.
Okay, I thought it was a fire truck, and that's what confused me. Sorry. Okay,
I'll mute when I'm not talking.
Yeah, for me, like you said, it was average issue again. Three out of five for me, and I'm curious where they go. Like you said, the last page certainly has a lot of potential. Where they go next? Shall we move on to our other book for the week?
Yeah, let's please do that.
Think Tank number 9. This is from Image Comics, Top Cow specifically. This was one that I tried out when it first launched, thinking, yeah, it sounds interesting, but really could go either way. And I've really enjoyed this. The basic concept is we've got a character, our lead character, who is a super genius. He develops all manner of weaponry and technology for the government. Partially because that's his job, partially because, well, he's a super genius and they've pretty much, I don't want to say put him into slavery or whatever, but they've got him under wraps, they keep tabs on him, he lives on site and works for them as much because they need him to work for him as anything else. The first story arc involved him essentially escaping and then getting recaptured, so a little bit of a love-hate relationship there. Now, have you read this title before, or was this your first issue?
This was my first issue, and but it will not be my last, because I enjoyed it a lot, and I'm glad you recommended this, because like you said, the technological aspects of this character, his creations, and the fact that he's kind of a fish out of water, kind of a tech geek, and put into these situations, it was really really great storytelling. I liked a lot about this, and I'm going to try to go back and pick up some of these early issues. I liked it so much.
I strongly recommend it. It is fun stuff. You know, in this issue, the super genius gets kind of stuck going out on a field mission, and just on the face of it, you know that's not going to end well, because, well, that'd be a boring story. But, I mean, the issue breakdown here, and to me it was kind of interesting, because we got about 7 pages of the mission with the why am I here, what the hell's going on, then 4 pages kind of flashing back to the setup for the mission, cut back to another 3 pages in the mission, then cut to another page that's before the mission setup even, so flashing further back, and then, you know, another couple of pages of the mission, and then kind of a big reveal at the end. Now, the reveal at the end worked for me. I'm questioning if it would work for new readers or not, because I don't know that, since you haven't read any issues, if you have any context for that scene or not.
No, I don't know who that was.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was thinking.
But that's okay.
But it was clear it was a reveal, which in and of itself does half the stuff.
Yeah, you could tell there was that meant something to somebody.
It was interesting, though, because even with the flashbacks and stuff like that, I felt a lot of times that's to hide frankly, a more boring story than if you just told it linearly. I think this could have been told in chronological order and been just as effective. So I'm not sure why they made that decision.
Oh, maybe they're just showing off their writing chops a little. I can see that. Yeah, it would have been just fine, just going straight through the story, because it was a good story.
Yeah,
and it was interesting, and it was a great touch when he discovers one of his technological advances that actually gets him with a dart, and it's like, oh wait, I designed these things. That was pretty clever, and there's a lot of nice touches like that, and that character, it's easy to root for him and get behind him in a very short while. You know, he's what is he, a genius? They describe him as a genius slacker.
Yeah.
I like that character a lot, and if the first eight are anything like that, I definitely want to go back and check those out, and I'm definitely adding this to my pull list, and I actually called in a previews on Think Tank 11 for the one coming up, just because it really was a great read. Love the art, the black and white art. It's really well done, very detailed, and you don't even miss the color. You really don't.
There are some books where it's black and white, and I feel, gosh, if it had color, it would make it pop a little bit more here. But really, with this one, like you said, the lack of color is almost not noticeable at all. I don't think it would add really anything significant.
It actually feels like washed out color, you know? It's so detailed and shaded and well done that it just seems like maybe it was almost sepia. You know,
well, it's a grayscale thing, and you're right, because I've read a few other things. I'm trying to remember what it was. It was one where it was literally full black, full white, no shade of gray.
Exactly.
And it's like, that's harsh. Whereas here you've got a lot of subtleties, a lot of depth to that grayscale, and it works. You know, the other thing I like about this is the part that I find really fully fleshed out is the sense of characters, the story. That's where they're trying to add the pop and the stuff to pull you in, not just, you know, is it flashy Photoshop effects or something.
And I always like the value-added stuff that some of the creator-owned comics give us. And what the writer's done here at the end also is giving you the background, his research journey to get to this point, and kind of citations so you can actually fact-check him on this the background of the story and some of the items that he has inserted here. And it's really nice when they do stuff like this, and it really adds to the story and makes you think as a reader that they're giving you more than the average comic is giving them.
Well, and they're not just making it up and slamming something out. They're actually giving it some thought.
A lot of thought.
Oh, yeah. The two things I liked about the whole science class backup feature when he's going through his research and stuff was the research tip of, if you're going to, you know, research military things, be sure you're not looking at a video game page.
Because sometimes there's a forum or something for Black Ops or something. And,
yeah, apparently he spent a lot of time on one of those getting a lot of great stuff, and then, hey, wait a sec, this is for the Xbox or, you know, whatever it was. That was funny. But then also the losing body mass at death, which played into this, that also played into Bloodshot that we reviewed the Zero Issue last week. So
yeah, that was very weird the way that came up twice in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I thought so too. But now I've got some places I can go research this. It's like, okay, I'm curious. This is just funny. So yeah, the value added stuff. That's one of the things that really sold me on the title early on too. Is not only is it just a damn good read, but they're trying to give a little bit extra as well. So,
and I just missed this completely. And, you know, my radar is usually pretty spot on for Image titles. And for some reason, it must have been the solicit or something that just didn't appeal to me. But I really, yeah, this is a nice title. And I want to, or maybe it was the Top Cow imprint, you know. And the fact that I don't know Matt Hawkins, but it's really a good read, and I would give this a 5. This is the best thing I read this week as far as our as far as the three that we chose, and you know, if it makes me want to go back in time and try to catch up, that's a really good comic.
Yeah, I to me, a sign of success baseline for a comic is you enjoyed reading it, you felt you got your money's worth. The next higher level of success is it convinces you to get the next issue. One of the best forms of success, and it seems like it definitely hit this for you, is you want to go seek out all the previous issues also.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of Matt Hawkins, he is the president and COO of Top Cow.
Okay.
So, you know, he's been around comics for quite some time. I'm not sure how much other writing he has done, but I'm really enjoying this. For me, it's a very strong 4 out of 5. Didn't quite make that 5 out of 5. But as a series, this is one of those that I do point out to people, just because it's so damn much fun. You know, it's got a lead character that is dynamic and entertaining to watch go through his day, and his days tend not to be boring also, so that helps too.
Yeah, it seems like it's pretty, they're probably pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's, well, and also just the weird tech gizmos and crap, you know, they could have done that without some of the action adventure aspects of it and whatnot, or the sarcastic humor and a few other things like that, and still had a good book. But the fact that it's working on so many of those different levels, I think is what really makes this book special. And it's also just different than most of what else is on the rack these days.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of what else is on the rack these days, this was the second largest week I've had this calendar year. I had 41 items. That includes previews in my shipment. And just for comparison, the largest week I had was 58 items back in June 26th, and that included a artist edition, the John Byrne one. So yeah, it took me a little bit to read everything this week. But I am current. I have read everything. Did you notice, I mean, we talked about Collider number 1 a couple of weeks back.
Not anymore.
It changed names to the Federal Bureau of Physics.
Yeah.
And kudos to the people who put that cover together, because I thought that was one of the smoothest sort of title transitions I've seen, because the cover worked under both titles. And I thought that was just brilliantly executed. So I was very impressed by that.
Well, I mean, who gets fired for naming the comic incorrectly?
I don't know that anyone does get fired. Sometimes it takes that first issue to come out to get that cease and desist letter. And frankly, I don't know what prompted the change of names. I think the Federal Bureau of Physics is a better name.
Much better name.
And I knew it was going to change because it had already changed in the solicits. But I was expecting this one to still come out under the Collider name. So if anyone knows the story behind the title change, I'd love to hear it. So please post on the forum.
Now, how will you be able to make that adjustment in your tracking?
Frankly, what I'll probably wind up doing is just retroactively renaming the Collider number 1 to Federal Bureau of Physics.
It's
one issue. I can live with that.
Yeah.
Because a year from now, people will have forgotten the first name entirely.
Yeah.
It's more of a problem when I get something like Phantom Stranger going to Trinity of Sin, Phantom Stranger, and those sorts of things. But
now, I did read Number Cruncher, number 2.
What'd you think?
Oh, that was great. Still a solid title, and I like the way it's going. I like the fact that I like more than one protagonist in this, which is going to, you know, in the next couple issues, I'm sure I'm going to have to make a choice between Protagonist 1 and Protagonist 2. And I think I know where I'm leaning, and I think I know where they're headed with this. But that doesn't mean I'm not enjoying the ride. And I like this. I thought this was just as good as the first one, and maybe was built upon that and had enough nice little touches that maybe even improved on that first issue. So I really liked it.
For me, I think it was a little better than the first issue. I liked the first issue a lot, but it was one of those that I was on the fence, do I want to keep going with it or not? And the second issue really sold me on it. I thought they were going to go one way with the Zero Clause or whatever it was. They went a completely different way. We had talked before about, I guess, Vinnie Jones playing the one character. Who would you cast as the mathematician? Because I think if they can get a good casting for that, and granted, given the nature of reincarnation, you'd need a few different people. But
like an Eisenberg or something?
I'm almost thinking Matt Bomer from White Collar.
Okay. Okay.
Somebody who seems smart, a little smooth, you know, and because I want to see where the next two issues go.
And the one reincarnation happened so he could only give her a hug for like a split second before being taken out. Was that right?
The
he was the older bald man?
Clearly playing the long game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just on the theory of big numbers that sooner or later you strike it just right or what. But yeah, there are a few aspects of that that...
Oh, it's really cool. It was really cool because the way number one ended, it ended on a down note for the mathematician. And he was so close. And I did not realize that he had a backup plan, a plan B. And
they could have had the second issue without the mathematician entirely, and that was just the character that Zane had hit the first time.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just that was the story of the day, if you will. But the fact that it's very much kind of a battle of wits between the two, under a very unusual kind of circumstance and playing field. Again, it makes the story so different than everything else out there. And that's something that gets harder and harder to do as new, very different stories go out there every day or every once in a while. That I found it just really enjoyable.
Oh, yeah. Great stuff.
I'm glad I stuck with that one. Or continued with. I don't want to say stuck. It's not like I'm, regretting it or anything by a long shot. So what else did you read this week that was interesting?
Did you read The Outliers, number one?
No, I did not. I didn't get that one.
That one was pretty odd. And I was hoping to get your take on it, but it was a story of a deaf mute kid who could actually like summon this Sasquatch type character, and had a very unique, by a guy named Eric T. Johnson, and had a very unique art style, very Matt Kent Mind Management esque, but not quite that. It was a little more blurry and sketchy. So I don't think it's the art that you would normally like.
Frankly, it sounds like the kind of art that if I saw it in previews, I'd almost not get the title.
Yeah, it had a Where the Wild Things Are look to it.
Okay.
And the story was okay, and it had some compelling aspects to it. I don't know if I'll read another one just because it was just way out there. It was just really, really odd.
Any title that seems like they're being odd almost for the sake of being odd or out there for the sake of being out there, it's like, you know, sometimes it can be really cool. A lot of times it's just too out there for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't fall into my sweet spot.
We kind of knew Lazarus number three, and got a really good glimpse at one of the other families and their Lazarus, who was a guy. So Joaquim, I believe his name was. And so we had some really great interaction between Forever and Joaquim, the other Lazarus. And we got a little glimpse of just how devious some of the Carlisle family members are.
Yeah.
And we got a little glimpse at the Moray family, a little bit more into their behind the scenes. I'm still with this title. I still think it's really solid.
Unless it makes a sudden left turn into and drops in quality, I'm going to stick with it because I'm really enjoying it. Rucka is a really good writer and seems to have a lot of thoughts as to where to go with this and such. The art's amazing, so, I mean, I can't see getting off this anytime soon unless it takes either a major left turn in storyline, direction, or quality. And I think the likelihood of that's pretty low.
Yeah. Batman Superman number three. This book's finally crystallizing for me a little. I like this issue a lot better than the first two. I felt it really took a step in the right direction, gave us some information, clarified some things, got to know some characters a little better, really got some great backstory between young Bruce Wayne and young Clark Kent that I really liked and really enjoyed. I don't know how you felt about that one, but I thought it really took a step up.
I agree with all that on the story side of it. On the art side, the art's still not clicking with me.
I kind of enjoy it.
Jay Lee's art is just darker and more, I'm going to say, abstract than I tend to care for. I think if the same story had been told by an artist who had a cleaner style, something that just generally clicks with me more, I'd be a lot more in favor of the title and a lot more positive on it. It was good. I agree with all you're saying about the backstory on young Bruce and Clark and stuff like that. It certainly, I think, was a more solid issue and solid story than the previous two. But there are times where the art style just, I feel like I'm having to get through the art to get to the story. But that's just my taste in art.
Now, I opened up Batman Incorporated Special number one, read a couple pages, turned it into some manga thing. So I put it back down, and I was hoping you could convince me to pick it back up again and read it.
I was going to ask if you had picked it up and put it down at the store or at home.
No, I have it.
Oh, I was going to say, doing it at the store would have been the better move. I read it, and what got me is they do a framing sequence where it's like Batman's going through case files or something. Yet the stories are clearly not written from that perspective. And then we get... some of the stories are entertaining, some not so much. Some are just really, that's what they chose to kind of end this on. And then the Bat Cow one at the end. It just had me thinking, really? That's how you're ending that story? Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
What target audience do you think you have here? I was underwhelmed by it. I think there were issues of both the recently ended Batman Incorporated series and the previous one that were outstanding. I think some of the depth of story and stuff they did in all those were really interesting. There are a few issues here and there that were misses. To me, this was not only a miss, it was a miss on an anthology sort of approach, which usually compounds the damage. I can't really think of any of the stories in there that made me think, well, the rest, you know, it wasn't so good. But this one, I mean, to me, it was all just kind of okay.
Yeah.
Not the note I would have ended that series on.
Thor: God of Thunder, number 12. I was really worried about picking this up just because I enjoyed those first 11 so very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know where he was going to go. And this was a pretty much done-in-one story, very heartfelt. Spent some time with an ex-girlfriend who was dying of cancer. And it was, we got a little bit of young Thor, a little bit of old Thor, but mostly this was Avengers Thor, an Avengers Thor story. So I kind of got a sense for maybe where Jason Aaron's going, that we're going to continue to see all three Thors in the future. And this was a nice story. I would have given a lot of fives out throughout that first 11 issues. This was just a four for me. So, still solid, and made me glad that I didn't put it away and never read another Thor. I'm glad I'm continuing, just to see what else he's going to do. But yeah, he really had nowhere to go but down, and he still did a really solid job.
It's interesting because if I had to rate that one and you know do a full review and stuff on it, and you know I read stuff for enjoyment, I read stuff for review, and there's a bit of a different process. I pay a lot more attention when I'm reading for review. I take notes, that kind of stuff. I read Thor 12 for just sheer enjoyment and stuff like that. Not that I don't enjoy reading for review, but again, different process. I was pleasantly surprised how smooth of a breather issue, interlude issue, epilogue, prologue, you know, whatever you want to call it, this was to the previous 11 issues. How much ground it covered. There were so many things. There were a couple of things that happened early on. We get a scene of, hey, go get the ale ready. We may have a visitor or whatever. Oh, thunderstorm. Bring both barrels of ale. He may be thirsty. You know, and it's like, oh, well, he's going to be sitting in a bar all issue. No, not at all. I mean, it went all over the place in a good way and just covered again so much ground. And like you said, was very heartfelt, very character based. And I've read a lot of issues over the years where it's let's go see what a typical week is, you know, for either Spider-Man or Wolverine or Batman,
right,
whoever. And it's almost like a clip scene of, yeah, I know they're in a lot of teams. Got it. Let's move on. This was just, he knows a lot of people, he stays in touch with a lot of people, he does a lot of things, and it really showed how many different places, how many different venues you could put Thor in and he fits. So, whether I would have given it a 5 out of 5 or not, I don't know, but it certainly would have been a possibility, a strong possibility.
Yeah, it was still a solid book, and it was almost effortless, it seemed effortless, in that Jason Aaron didn't have any kind of weight on his shoulders about the 11 issue epic that he had just finished writing. He just, oh, I'm just going to keep telling another Thor story. And it didn't seem like he had any of the pressure that I had just by reading it.
I almost wonder if over that year or so he'd been writing that 11 parter, if all of these little thoughts of, hey, wouldn't it be cool if, and then it almost kind of built this issue for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because in a lot of issues where you've got just the equivalent of Spider-Man swinging down, you know, Manhattan and, oh, there's a bank robber, you've got a little filler stuff before around the main story. They didn't really have time or space for any of that with the last 12 issues of Thor, or 11 issues of Thor. So some of the stuff we saw here, you know, arguably could have been sprinkled through if he'd just been, you know, not that a God of Thunder would stop bank robbers, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So having the issue just filled with that, but not in a way that seemed overly dense, overly packed, or anything of the sort, it was amazing how much it covered and how effortlessly it flowed. And like you said, it's I'm very curious what the next arc is, how that's going to go, and if we get excellent done-in-one stories like this, kind of between arcs and stuff, just as breathers, as, you know, here's other things he does in his other time.
Or you don't have to go into another big magnum opus. You could do a series of one issue and two issue arcs, and that would be okay too.
It would actually be fun for some title to do, you know, almost a feast or famine sort of approach to superheroics. You've got one arc where there's just so much going on. He's got three villains he's got to be juggling, you know, as he's fighting and solving crimes or whatever. And then he hits a week where there's just not much going on, and he's looking for stuff or something, you know.
I think there's something there.
I think it could be fun. But yeah, I was very pleased with this, and it continues to be a great title.
FF11 did a rebound for me. I was not impressed with the last issue, with the insertion of the actual creative team into the book itself. I thought that really kind of went off the rails a little. I thought this with the Mr. Impossible character was, or Mr. Incredible, what is his name?
The Impossible Man.
The Impossible Man and his son was just really a great little story, and the interaction between Medusa and Impossible's kid Impossible was really good, and I thought this really righted the ship, and was a solid issue again.
I would agree with most of that. I don't think I felt as strongly about it as you did, but I thought this was a good issue. Some of it, it's like, okay, they're seeing the Impossible Man. What are the odds he's going to have a kid and that kid's going to join the Future Foundation? There's nothing wrong with that, because I think that sort of a character adds an interesting dynamic to the group. Was it a radical surprise? No, not really. I think FF is the lesser of the two Fantastic Four titles, but I'm really enjoying the other one too. So, it's, you know, high bar to meet, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Larfleeze number 3, still working for me. It's not quite as good as the first couple, but this was still a good solid issue. I'm still liking this title.
It was good, but I think it had slipped a little. You know, I am curious if it's going to have the longevity of other Green Lantern family titles.
At some point, a book called Larfleeze is going to have Larfleeze in the title most of the time. They can't continue to dodge him for infinity, I would not think so. You know, I think at some point he's going to have to be front and center and in it for the, you know, let's say 2/3 of the pages. And then we'll see what happens.
And if they do that, do they have to do what they did on Red Lantern, which is with Atrocitus or whatever, really retool the character such to where it's not just a, you know, rage-driven character, but somebody a bit more sophisticated, a bit more three-dimensional and stuff? Larfleeze is so mine that unless you retool him a little, it's hard to make him the feature character without being blatantly a one-note character.
Yeah.
And I think some of what they did in this issue goes towards that, particularly the way the issue left off and kind of the what's going on, you know, with the status quo.
Wolverine in the X-Men 35, this finished up the Hellfire Club saga. And our Hellfire School saga or whatever, and I'm kind of glad that's over. It was good for ups and downs. It had its ups and downs, and it was pretty good. But now it's going to lead into this Battle for the Atom thing, and like the Infinity crossover, I'm not gonna participate in the Battle for the Atom either. So this will be my last Wolverine and the X-Men until that thing has run its course, and then I might pop back in and check it out again. I just don't feel like playing along in the Battle for the Atom thing.
Any particular reason?
I just don't want to chase down titles that I'm not normally reading.
Fair enough. That's a good reason.
I know it's going to shoot over into Uncanny and
every other mutant.
Every
book
other X book. So I'm just gonna take a break from those X titles and you know, dip back in later when it's over.
I can understand that. I'm going to keep going with it, but, you know, I get all the other books anyway, so it's not like I'd be picking up anything else extra. But I do think that's one of the risks of any of these crossovers, events, regional incidents, whatever we want to call them. It's just, while you're trying to get people to read other books, you run the risk of that being a backlash and people saying, you know, if it was just one other book, yeah, what's the big deal? If it's 15 and I'm getting 3, wait a sec, forget it, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, if it's a really good story, people say, oh, it's a really good story, I should go check it out. But so often it's almost more marketing hype and not a really great story. But I'm curious about Battle for the Atom. It looks like it could be a lot of fun.
Uncanny number 3. Are you still reading that Dynamite yeah, book?
I'm liking that.
Yeah, it's moving along. I like this issue a lot. I thought it was really solid, and some of the value added stuff we got at the end, where we got a glimpse behind the scenes of the script and the script to story aspects of a few of the pages, and that was nice. You know, you get to as I was reading this issue, the Styles character.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking the guy from The Wire and the guy from Fringe when I was looking at it. And then when I got to the back, the little script thing, when it showed the script, he was talking about the, you know, I'm thinking the guy from The Wire, the characters, can't remember the actor's name, but who played the guy from The Wire and the guy that was in Fringe.
Yeah.
So I'm
yeah.
like, oh, that's awesome, because you nailed it. That's exactly who I was seeing in this issue.
That's cool. It's nice when the artist can really understand what the writer's after and really kind of fulfill that. Because I've seen a couple where it's like, yeah, it looks like that guy, but it doesn't feel and seem like that guy.
Right.
But, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm enjoying that title and stuff. For me, though, it was a huge week.
Mm-hmm.
What else did you read that was good?
Extinction Parade number 2. This was more vampires and zombies, blood and gore. Write up stuff you really like.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I got 10 copies. I got none.
And this must have been delayed. It seems like it's been forever since the first one came out. So, but it was a solid number 2 issue. We got a lot of backstory. It didn't pick up where we left off. It kind of went back and looked at the uprising of the zombies again in a different light through the vampire's eyes. And it was really, really well done. I don't know what to think about this book, where it's going to be going. I'm not really sure, but these two issues have been pretty solid, so I will continue to read it.
I have to say, a good first 2 issues, that's usually a good sign. Yeah, I usually don't drop a book at that point.
No, it was really pretty solid. Injustice number 8 in print came out, just really good stuff in there, and I'm anxious to see what Tom Taylor does with Earth 2. I think it's really I'm hoping it invigorates some juice into that title. And
how can it not? He's doing such a great job with Injustice. This was a really good issue. It seemed to be, it has me thinking the other shoe's going to drop next issue in some respects, of that title. And again, him going on to Earth 2, which I think has been floundering a little over the last few issues, is just going to be a really good thing for that title.
That's the great thing about this digital first stuff is, even if a third of the story, you know, is not as strong, the likelihood of the other two thirds not being strong are much less. You know, you're going to almost always get a solid 3-issue arc, or at least 2 of the 3 are going to be solid. And that, you know, the majority of the thirds are solid by some kind of algebraic equation that should be a good title.
It ups the odds, you get the return on the investment. Because with Arrow, sometimes they're all, you know, 3 solo, you know, done-in-one type things. And sometimes, yeah, all right, the first one was okay, the second was okay. But there's, like you said, there's usually at least one of them out of the bunch that really works for you. Typically, like I said, you get a very solid done in one comic that's done as the 3 digital, and usually because they were sold as separate installments, you've gotten a lot more forward story momentum. And a typical comic, I've had a couple issues of this, that, and the other where it's, you know, it was an okay issue, but it'll work better in the bigger picture. It didn't really move it along, and it was just, Scarlet Spider was kind of that way. You know, I was having a hard time finding a lot of meat to the story in some respects. Whereas if that same thing had been paced for digital, there would have been at least two turning points in the story in the middles, you know, at the various one-third, two-third, you know, at the end points that would have helped move it along that much faster and further. So I really think the digital-first stuff that DC's experimenting with and stuff is a good move, and you know, I'm getting, I think, all of their digital-first titles for the most part. I'm not getting Batman 66. But the ones I'm getting, I am enjoying.
I just read number two of that, and it was okay. But
that was one where after the first one, it's like, you know, I see where they're going. I get where they're going. I don't know that I need to go there.
Yeah. It was very close resemblance to Burgess Meredith in the second one because it was a Penguin story. But besides that, it was just okay and not really worth it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the what DC's doing digitally is really, they're kind of leading the pack. I don't see Marvel doing anything like this at all.
I can't think of any digital first things for Marvel at the moment. They have done one or two in the past. That have later gotten collected into one-shots, but I don't know that they have any ongoing. Certainly, if any of our listeners are aware of some of the stuff, please let us know. I'm very curious.
And basically, they're just, you know, their Marvel Now stuff has a digital version, but it's a portrait style that, you know, just a standard reproduction. It's not the landscape layout that some of the digital first titles at DC are going with.
Well, there's something fundamentally different than just doing a bonus digital copy of a print comic versus, like you said, what DC's doing with digital first that they're then collecting to print. The story is written for one medium or the other and then just kind of repurposed. And just as like we've seen with stuff getting written to trade, you tend to have a more decompressed style. We're seeing a more compressed style for stuff written for digital and then compiled, whereas we're not seeing any real change when it's just, hey, let's take it and toss it up online after we sell the print version.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I gotta commend DC on that because it's some really good stuff.
I agree. I think they've gotten to the point where they have almost, well, if not one title a day, 7 days a week, at least 5 or 6 days out of the week. I am surprised Marvel hasn't really kind of picked up the pace on some of that and tried to follow suit.
And as we've seen with some of the smaller publishers, just how difficult it is for them to get their titles out consistently when they're, you know, come out on time, make sure that they come out when they're supposed to come out. For DC to be able to put out weeklies on top of their 52 monthlies, and I mean, yeah, they're a giant corporation, but still, it you see how difficult it is for publishers to do anything close to that. So it's nice for the reader when the stuff comes out consistently.
Yeah, I think some people might push back that the rash of defections from DC creatively, the creative team on Batwoman just quit and their last issue will be 26 or whatever, that I think a lot of that is not necessarily ramifications, but certainly a bit of fallout from keeping the trains running on time. You know, that business side of it sometimes works against the creative side of it. That's not specifically what happened with the Batwoman creative team. It seems like a recurring theme of, we told them we were going to do story A, they approve story A, we get most of the way through it, and they say, ah, no, change the ending, which is unfortunate.
J.H. Williams is leaving Batwoman?
Yeah. Wow. The creative team is leaving, and hang on just a sec, let me pull up that article real quick. Oh, let's see, J.H. Williams and Hayden Blackman leaving Batwoman after issue 26, both announced in identical posts on their websites saying, you know, heavy heart, heartbroken, didn't want to do it, that kind of stuff, but just last-minute editorial changes. And this is stuff that we've been hearing time and time again at various points from different creators at DC, particularly with the new 52. And some of that is, it's creator-owned characters, so you got to expect certain restrictions. But flip side, if something gets approved and then they say, oh, no, change it at the last minute, if I were a creator, I'd be frustrated too. But, you know, I completely agree with what you're saying on DC's able to get the stuff out on time on a regular basis. Some publishers have a harder time with that. Flip side, some publishers keep their creators really happy even if they don't come out with stuff that often. It's like,
yeah, and well, Marvel puts their stuff out on time too, and you don't hear any creator discord over there.
Occasionally you do, but certainly not to the level we've been getting with DC of late.
Right.
Every once in a while you get somebody storming out of any publisher. But, you know, it's two sides to every story. It's going to be interesting to see if this is a trend that continues with DC and if they eventually burn out all of the big name creators or whatever, or if the editorial winds shift and people decide, for whatever reason, Marvel's no longer the place to work. Let's go elsewhere.
When Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo storm off, and I will panic. That's when I'll panic.
I think it got interesting when George Perez didn't so much storm off as just quietly leave. He seems like an easy guy to keep happy, and they failed to do that.
Yeah, James Robinson, too. He seemed like a company man, you know. I would not think he would have had the clashes that he had either. He seemed to be all in on the New 52 and the direction of DC, and for him to leave like that, that was surprising also.
To me, the big one would be if it's Geoff Johns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if at that point, I mean, that guy is about as all in as you can get shy of, say, Jim Lee, you know? But, again, it's corporate-owned characters. They've got certain things they do and don't want to do with this stuff, for right or wrong. Sometimes I agree with what they're saying they didn't want to do. Sometimes I think, well, what was the harm in doing that? But,
I can't imagine what kind of damage they could do in Batwoman. Is anybody reading that?
I think there are. I think some of it is...
I mean, I like to look at the art. It's beautiful, but...
Yeah. It's not like it's Batman or Superman or Wonder Woman, and there are certain things they just don't want to do with those properties. But, you know, again, it's... whether I agree or disagree with some of the edicts they said, this is never going to happen, or you can't do this, or whatever, doesn't matter. It's they own the character. You know, it's unfortunate that this is not really the first creative teams they've kind of driven off Batwoman in particular. Rocco was one of them. So, you know, he originated the character. But, again, not unique to the Batwoman character. They've lost creators in other areas. And some of it is nature of the beast working with creative types. There's certain things that, you know, they want more freedom than sometimes companies can give them. But going to be interesting, to see where things are at in another year or so. Just as more time goes on, does this blow over or does this continue to be a recurring problem for DC or whatever?
Well, the early returns on their... 3D covers have been pretty impressive. I guess there's like a feeding frenzy over those things, those 3D covers. So that seemed to be a marketing ploy that may have worked. Who knew?
I think it may have worked in terms of sales. I think it really backfired in terms of goodwill.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that, you know, some of these things have already gone up multiple times cover price at some stores. Somebody posted on the forum that their store, even though they'd said, I only want the 2D version, had a set of the 3D versions available for them. Just, hey, if you want them. And that was a way of, you know, respecting loyal customers. And I thought that was awesome.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
I'm hearing some reports that more versions or more copies of the 3D covers may not be available until February. I'm like, that seems a little odd. I was thinking they were going to be available, you know, a full set in December or something. The bottom line is, while there's a feeding frenzy on it, there's a very finite supply, and to a very large degree, DC mismanaged, maybe unavoidably so, but they mismanaged getting the solicitation cycle worked out to where people could order what they wanted.
I'm hoping the feeding frenzy translates into folks reading these comics and not eBaying them. I'd like to think that you're kind of, because of the cover gimmick, it's actually going to get folks to sample a title they wouldn't normally sample because it's got a cool cover and it's about a villain mostly with a backup character that you may normally not read. So I'm hoping that expands their horizon a little bit.
I certainly hope that too, but I just want to toss this thought out and see what you think of it. Do these 3D lenticular covers seem like something that you could, I don't know, maybe get the cover or the issue graded, tossed into a CGC slab, and still get the full coolness of the 3D cover? In other words, it's something that, while I hope they read the stuff, the gimmick is strictly on the cover, there's no need for them to.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, not having made the 2D covers available in the initial solicitation, some retailers didn't apparently somehow missed the memo on this, which I find a little hard to believe. Well, understandable given how busy retailers can be, but there was also a big to-do about it, too. It's going to be interesting to see how the sales go and what people think of the issues and if there's any kind of carryover, because typically these things are big to-do as they're happening. And frankly, quickly forgotten thereafter.
Exactly. All in all, this was a good week for comics. But I'm kind of excited for next week and with the Forever Evil yeah. Number one and start seeing some of these covers in the shops. I think it's going to be a good week next week too.
I think so too. I'm much more looking forward to Forever Evil than before reading this issue of Justice League. We got the final issue of X-Factor, a couple other number ones coming out. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff coming out these days. Anyone who can't find a comic worth reading is either an incredibly picky reader or just needs some help finding the right title for them. Because really, I think there's a ton of stuff out there. Again, like I said, I got about I got over 50 items this week. Now, are all of them A-list 5 out of 5? No, of course not. But I think there's a definite audience for every one of the books I picked up that would just go nuts over them. Anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
That will do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Forever Evil number 1 from DC, X-Factor 262 from Marvel, and Codename Action Number 1 from Dynamite Entertainment. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.